This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us in studio today are Julius Fisher, who's with the group Hawaii Green Growth. Ann Botticelli is Hawaiian Air's Vice President for Corporate Communications. Philip Lahaila-Walter is with the Department of Land and Natural Resources, Division of Forestry and Wildlife. And the Nature Conservancy's Trey Menard is joining us by phone from the Big Island. Welcome, all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Julian, if you can start us off, my understanding is that when we had that much ballyhooed International Conservation Congress, they had their conference here 2 years ago, it wanted to offset its carbon footprint, but we really couldn't take advantage of it here in Hawaii because we didn't have a system in place, right? So it was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, definitely.
Talk about that.
Sure. Yeah, first of all, good morning. Thanks so much for having me, and apologies. I think I'm coming down with a cold, so my voice might be a little bit huskier than it usually is. Anyway, I can kind of start with just giving an overview of what a carbon offset is that kind of precipitated the interest for the IUCN World Conservation Congress in 2016. So it kind of comes from a recognition that climate change is a really serious issue that we need to tackle. And most countries in the world recognize that we need to do something about that, and we need to do something quickly. So there's certain activities that emit carbon and other activities that actually pull carbon from the atmosphere again. So these carbon sequestering and pulling it out of the atmosphere activities, that's what a carbon offset project is about. Those usually cost something. But fortunately, there's a lot of individual companies and countries around the world that recognize that it's worth doing. So there's a demand for that kind of activity. Now, the thing is that these buyers want to have an assurance that when they invest money in something, that their investment is actually leading to a reduction in carbon. So how do you prove that? How do you prove to those buyers that you're actually doing what they want you to do? And that's essentially what setting up a carbon offset project is. You translate what you're doing into something that is a credit that you can actually certify to someone that you're doing this activity. And that really empowers individuals, companies, and any kind of entity around the world to reduce their carbon footprint, even if they're part of a system that doesn't, or part of a technology that doesn't allow them to reduce it per se just yet. Be it a technological thing, or be it, you know, me as a person living in a house, I don't really have control of where my electricity comes from, but I do have control of being able to purchase a credit that offsets the footprint from that. Most of those activities that pull carbon out of the atmosphere also have a number of really awesome co-benefits, and we have some of our partners in the studio here today who can talk more eloquently about the co-benefits than I do, but there's ecosystem diversity, cultural watershed hydrology benefits that all come with those activities most of the time. So in the end, suddenly you have you've created a mechanism through carbon offset credits of actually investing in nature and in best management practices and productive and sustainable practices that is market-based, because you have demand, supply, and a purchase agreement there. It's stable. And there's no tax dollars involved that can be siphoned off to other purposes. It's actually completely independent of tax revenue. It can be supported by government, but it's not part of our tax bill. So that's really something that got the Sustainability Business Forum interested in carbon offsets as a model. So the Sustainability Business Forum is a group of local CEOs, 14 of them, and business leaders who want to do good for Hawaii and want to do it together. And that's really exciting.
So, Ann, yeah. You represent, I guess, the voice of business at the table. Who's a part of this forum?
Well, Hawaiian Airlines is one of the founding members of the Sustainability Business Forum. Kamehameha Schools is at the table. Alexander and Baldwin. Hawaii Gas, Hawaiian Electric Company, Castle Foundation is part of it. So it's not just commercial businesses. It's also nonprofits are there. Ulupono Initiative is part of it. Pulama Lana'i, the McNaughton Group, to name a few. Hawaii Community Foundation is part of it. We all meet on a quarterly basis as part of the Hawaii Green Growth Initiative. And together have been not just exploring how to support the development of a potential carbon offset market in Hawaii, but we participate in a Green Your Business initiative. So all of us have signed up to participate with Hawaii Energy to do sort of an analysis of our campuses and our offices to see if there are ways that we can reduce our own footprint.
So it's not just like inspecting the lint in your belly button. It's kind of like, okay, I promise to do X, Y, and Z in order to meet our green goals, you know, that the governor has kind of set out for us. It's a They're major goals.
Yeah, I think that if you, in the broader sense of it, this group of businesses has, and all of us have, an interest in the sustainability of our place. And sustainability in every sense of the word. Economic sustainability is certainly part of it. We have lifestyles to protect. We have a way of life here that is magical and wonderful. We have an economic engine which, like it or not, depends on bringing people here from the outside and will probably for the foreseeable future. And the reason we have such a premier vacation destination is because we have an environment that is like no other. And so we need to protect that environment. We need to make sure that environment is sustainable. And we need to make sure that we have a tourism economy that is sustainable. And by that I mean a conversation not about just bringing more and more people in, but how do you create, what is reasonable growth for this number one industry? What is a kind of economic development model that brings people in at a lower price point when they're younger, develop some sort of tourism base that wants to come back every 10 years and grow old as somebody who comes regularly to Hawaii? What is reasonable growth? And at the same time, how do we as businesses all get together and make sure that we're protecting the environment as well and doing right by the environment?
I've been to a number of these sustainability meetings, and one thing that kind of caught my attention was that one of the facilitators was saying, well, I'm flying less. You know, and I'm thinking, oh, gosh, you know, it's going to make me feel guilty if I would decide to go on vacation that I'm, you know, kind of contributing to the pollution in the air. But, you know, so how do you do that in the marketplace? And so I guess this is the offset thing is something that we can do.
Well, I think that there are a couple of ways to look at this issue. One is to reduce your emissions. One is to offset the emissions through the carbon offset mechanism. I know at Hawaiian Airlines, we do a lot to lighten the weight of the plane so that we consume less fuel. We do a lot at our own campuses. We just built a hangar. That hangar has LED lighting and all kinds of energy efficient attributes to it. I know as a human being, I wash my water in my wash in cold water. I hang my laundry on the clothesline. I'm not sure that it means that we have to restrict how much we travel. But for example, we could potentially offer our vacationers an eco-friendly vacation. You could say for $5, you can pay into a fund that will go into buy a carbon offset credit, and you could have a guilt-free airplane trip to Hawaii. There are different ways to sort of look at it, right? But the idea is, to your earlier question, if we had a mechanism in Hawaii that allowed people to offset whatever carbon they were emitting coming over here, you would have a way to bring money in to Hawaii and incentivize people to keep land in Hawaii in uses other than development.
Now, going back to the international conference that was here, they wanted to offset their carbon footprint, and we didn't have anything in place. I would imagine that, you know, DLNR, we've got all this land, and, you know, there's this big push to kind of reforest areas and bring back our native forests. How are you folks looking at this?
Yeah, thank you for having us here, too. We have been thinking about this issue for quite a while now and investigating different or exploring different ways of taking advantage of this new mechanism. And in order to kind of lead the charge, we started two pilot projects a while ago where we identified an area on Mauna Kea on Hawaii Island and another area on the southern slopes of Haleakala. Both huge areas, over 4,000 acres each, that are prime areas for reforestation. Those are currently in grassland. They're not managed anymore. They are a fire hazard the way they are right now. And they need to be reforested. The area on Mauna Kea is Palila habitat, and for the bird experts among our listeners, Palila is one of the most endangered species we have in this state, and they will directly benefit from reforestation. But it's not only biodiversity protection, it's water replenishment. Our forests capture so much more water than other land uses, so they feed direct into our freshwater supply. By covering the soil with forests, we protect it from being run off and smothering our reefs and destroying our reefs. So there's a direct connection between what we do Mauka side protects the Makai side. So there's huge benefits in this. And in these two projects, we are working towards getting those certified, just like Julius just explained, under a voluntary carbon market. There are several big standards out there, and we are currently evaluating which one is the best for us. We did start already with the reforestation in these areas, and now it's just about proving that these forests are storing the amount of carbon that we think.
So it's a shame, though, that we couldn't take advantage of the credits, right? Those went to other places around the
world. Exactly. That's what we thought, too. We totally agree. And on the other hand, we don't want to take bad decisions. We want to take the best decisions we can for our public lands. And it's quite a process to vet all these standards and to identify the one that is right for us. And it's quite frankly, it's still quite expensive to get this certification. So it's also a funding issue there. Not only is it quite expensive to do reforestation, but also the certification adds a significant figure to the bill.
Okay. And if you're listening out there, we invite you to join in on our conversation. The numbers to reach us, 808-941-3689 on Oahu or 1-877-941-3689 on the neighbor islands. And we're going to reach out to the Nature Conservancy's Trey Menard, who is joining us by phone from the Big Island. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's your take on where we're at right now with the offset program?
Well, the Nature Conservancy has been working in forests here in Hawaii and across the country and even across the globe for decades. And so a lot of the activities that go into reforesting areas or improving the management of these forests is something that the Conservancy has been doing for quite a while. We have a preserve on the Big Island that we've been doing this work for almost 20 years now. And so we've fenced this area off. We've removed a lot of the damaging animals like pigs and goats and sheep. And we've been working to improve this forest for quite a while and have actually seen some pretty great results. So when the idea of being able to sell carbon credits on a market and bring in an alternative revenue stream to help us manage our preserve came up. I mean, that, it seemed like something that was too good to be true almost. And so we started looking into it about five years ago. And I guess really from our standpoint, a lot of these activities that we've been doing, like improving the forest, you know, have been done really primarily for biodiversity conservation, for watershed health, improving our ability to capture and provide water into our aquifers, you know, those kinds of activities. And so, really we've looked at it, from the co-benefit side and then, being able to sell carbon credits on a market to help bring in an alternative revenue stream to support that work, it seemed like a win-win. But then more broadly, we started looking at it like, well, if we can make it work on our lands, then maybe we could, that would help incentivize other landowners to do the same on their lands. And so we've been working with watershed partnerships across the state for, close to 20 years now, working with private landowners, working with DLNR. And so really we saw this as like, hey, if we can make this work on our land, maybe we can, help other landowners do it on their lands as well, and then we can really expand our forests and help improve the forests that we already have and to provide more water for our aquifers. And I think this is really important. We need to look at it from the standpoint of not only capturing carbon to mitigate climate change, but also if we could do that at the same time, improve our forests and improve our watersheds to make our islands more resilient to climate change in the future. I mean, we're looking at, you know, potentially serious impacts to our fresh water supply. I mean, I think this is kind of another win-win for us. So, so that's kind of how, you know, we really got into it. Our area is relatively small compared to the state's areas. It's about 6,000 acres of land that we have forests that we're entering into an improved forest management program for the to sell carbon credits. And we anticipate, you know, maybe 100,000 carbon credits would be available to sell. And, you know, so that's it's not a huge project, but again, you know, it is kind of a pilot that we can hopefully show other landowners that, hey, this is something that you can do as well.
Well, so who gets to buy these credits? I mean, is it just local companies, outside companies? And can you talk to that? How does that work?
I think that's for the TNC to answer, actually. I will say that our interest in it is philanthropic at this point. This is kudos to TNC and to the other members of the Sustainability Business Forum. This is really an opportunity for businesses to say, let's provide some seed capital. Well, not even really seed capital, because I'm not sure we'll get anything back from it. It's just really let's all get together and provide a way for the Nature Conservancy, which already has this land, it's already fenced, the feral ungulates are removed. Let's test the market. Let's see if Hawaii can get out there and have and go into the marketplace. And prove that land can be used in this way and credits can be sold in the voluntary market in a way that makes sense and is scalable. And if it is, then the state can use their land for it. There are watersheds around the islands that maybe can do it. And we can have another source, another industry maybe for these islands. That's a really awesome potential outside industry for us.
So, Trey, how does this work? I mean, are we modeling this after some other country or some other state that's got this system in place?
Yeah, the Nature Conservancy has other carbon projects on the mainland. In particular, there's one in Tennessee where we've been drawing some information from the folks that have set up a pretty large one in Tennessee. And so, yeah, I think that at this point, I mean, we are just about to launch our project. We're about to you know, finish negotiations on a project with a project developer. So that's kind of where we're at right now. But yeah, I think this is something that the Nature Conservancy has been doing for quite a while, almost 10 years, I think, across the country.
Okay, we do have a call coming in from Kauai. Are you there?
Hello, yes, I am.
Is this Virginia?
Yes, it is.
So what's on your mind?
Okay, I'm just calling because I'm following this closely, and there are two quick things. One is that the Eco Village Tourism Center of Italy in Cinque Terre passes millions of tourists every year through that area, and they use all eco-friendly models, from diesel buses to the passes that you have to buy to go in there. The other thing is Amsterdam, where there's less sun than Hawaii, uses solar-powered buses at the airport, solar-powered jetways. Hawaiian Airlines could have solar power on the top of their hangars. And on the Gaza Strip, where they have nothing, they have figured out how to make lightweight concrete blocks out of ash because they have nothing but been bombed to ashes. And they're lightweight. They're so lightweight, a woman can pick them up, and they're stronger than concrete. And now they're building houses out of them. We could use our recycled paper and ash and use a matrix and turn out blocks without having to ship so much stuff into Hawaii and out of Hawaii. Our recycling, China won't take anymore, so we have to repurpose it.
That's a good point. Thank you very much for calling in. Julius, we were talking earlier about, you know, what are the various industries that emit a lot of carbon, and you had mentioned that concrete is pretty bad.
Yeah. Thank you for your comments, Virginia. Those are definitely innovative solutions that different places are coming up with, and that's part of what we're trying to do in Hawaii as well, with kind of the unique partnership between these business leaders and the Nature Conservancy, is being open to walking through that process that, as Philip mentioned, can be sometimes quite complicated to set this up in a way that is certifiable. And these offsets can be used for mitigating emissions from a lot of different activities. So concrete is one of them. Methane emissions can be caused by rice paddies, other different agricultural practices that you might not think of when thinking about carbon emissions. So it's not just fossil fuels. Some industrial processes also have carbon emissions as byproducts. So there's a different, lots of different technologies and practices that emit carbon that sometimes are not as easy to switch or reduce. So carbon offsets can help with that.
Anything else that you folks want to chime in on, Philip?
I really like this emphasis on using local resources, because that's another hat that we are wearing at DLNR. Is we do have a lot of land and we do have a lot of resources. There's actually thousands of acres that have been planted here for timber. And that haven't been used so far. And these timber stands sequester quite a bunch of carbon as well. And using those for local construction is another huge opportunity that the state has not been taken advantage of so far. Now, that doesn't mean that we are exploiting our forests. For every tree we are cutting, we are regrowing, and the next tree will sequester even more carbon. And when you use wood as a building material, not only is it much lighter, it does not have to be imported from the continent or anywhere else from. It embodies a lot of carbon, too. It circumvents that whole process of creating cement that we just heard emits a lot of CO2 as well. So there's lots of opportunities still in this state, and that's another thing that we are working very hard on is taking advantage of our local resources in a sustainable way.
So I know the governor has set out this lofty goal by 2045 on all these sustainable green goals that we want to reach, and a lot of in order to get to those goals, we've got to maybe change our policy, whether it's the building codes, or whatever, the regulations that need to change if we're going to kind of turn the canoe in a different direction.
Right.
Any thoughts on what the airlines can do, when it comes to that? Or I don't know, what are the regulations that need to change?
Well, as I said, first of all, to your caller's point, it certainly is hot out at the airport, and I know that the airport just finished putting up solar panels on the seventh floor up there in the parking garage. So good for them.
Awesome.
I think that's great. I think that there's a lot that can be done, and I welcome the conversation. I think we all do welcome a conversation on everything that can be done, and the goal is lofty. As I said, we do a lot to reduce the emissions on our airplane. We even have participated. We have a gauge affixed to our aircraft that sort of tracks how we fly and helps us determine the optimum route for emissions and things like that. They're all different things you can participate in. Biofuels are something that a lot of people recommend. They are very expensive right now. There is no common piping system, so you'd have to have a truck out on the tarmac to pump fuels into an airplane. But those are all things that I think ought to be on the table for discussion. And one of the things that I believe is really important and exciting about the Sustainability Business Forum in this format is you have business, NGO, nonprofits all coming together on a regular basis and really talking about common solutions to common problems and working together for that,
so
toward that.
We had a caller, a shy caller, and I think they just were listening to our show, and they were asking, what is a carbon credit and what does it do again? Julius, do you want to kind of refresh our memory?
Yeah. So a carbon credit is usually for 1 ton of carbon. That's usually the unit that's used in. So, for example, if you were to fly from Honolulu to L.A., that would emit about a third of a ton of carbon for your ticket. So you could purchase, you could make that flight 3 times and then purchase a credit. And that gives you the guarantee that somewhere that money that you just used to purchase that credit is being used to promote an activity that pulls exactly that amount of carbon out of the atmosphere again. That's how I would put it.
Okay. I know this year, instead of buying my tree, out at one of the stands that are set up. I went to a local farm and I bought a tree, and then I thought, oh, I just cut down a tree. So I felt a little guilty, even though I was buying local. Well, if you're listening, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio, and we are talking about offsetting carbon emissions and how best do we do that. You can join the discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break.
Well, I can listen to everything I need for the day, from the news to the music to good stories. And it's 24/7, 365. I think probably Derek in his morning edition is one of my favorites. And, of course, I love Kanakapila on Sunday afternoons.
Member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Radio with vision. Listen and see.
I'm Ira Flato on the next Science Friday, a look at cancer immunotherapy, putting the body's own immune system to work to fight cancer. Why does it work so well in some cases, but not others? Plus raccoons that outsmart the scientists who study them.
Raccoons always seem to behave in ways that I don't expect.
It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon from 1 to 3. Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Bush Consulting and Sacred Hearts Academy.
We did have a question about what is a carbon credit, and there are probably lots of folks who want to know about, you know, what's the difference with a credit versus a carbon tax, because lawmakers are talking about possibly introducing legislation this session to create some kind of carbon tax. Anybody want to take that?
Nobody likes to talk about taxes.
Of course not.
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion out there still how we are tackling this huge issue. And we just saw the newest report from the UN about how devastating it actually looks like right now, how the carbon emissions are actually increasing and not decreasing. And if we don't act now, we'll have devastating effects later on that might even threaten our species. So it's a serious issue. That being said, there's a lot of ideas out there. There's a lot of models worldwide how this is tackled. There is compliance markets. I guess the best known in our country is California, who went ahead and put a cap on their emissions. And they said there will be no more emissions than this cap. And then they went on and divided all these emissions into allowances and made auctions, and all the emitters had to bid on these allowances. So that way, these emitters could only emit however much they bought. And the great thing is about that, the funds went straight back into climate change mitigation efforts like reforestation, fire suppression, fire avoidance, urban forestry, another very important factor. So that's one. The compliance market is one idea. And then there's the idea of a simple tax, which a lot of economists say it's easier because you don't have to come up with a cap. You don't have to go through that whole process of setting up an agency that monitors all the emitters and that makes sure they comply with all the regulation. There's a simple tax on any fossil fuel and any emissions that are done in this state, and that's that. At this point, I don't know if we are far along yet to say which one it will be. But it does sound like the discussion is leaning towards a carbon tax or carbon fee.
We did have a guest on the show earlier this week, the Citizens Climate Lobby, and they said that they were able to get some legislation introduced in Congress, in the House, which is the, let me see if I remember, the Carbon Fee and Dividend Act, which basically is a fee, and they say not a tax, but at the end of the day that citizens would get a check in the mail. You mentioned earlier that you had an experience somewhere else in another country where they did that.
Yeah, I lived in British Columbia, Canada for a while, and all of a sudden one day I got a check for $100 Canadian. And when I investigated where this money comes from, I found out that it was a carbon tax revenue that was funneled back to the population or the public. And I think a big part in this whole discussion is social equity. People are worried that whatever we decide on might land in a bill that hits the poorest in our communities. And in order to avoid that, there is models that, yes, we would pay a tax, or yes, we would charge these companies with offsetting their emissions. But then money goes back to these members in our communities who would suffer from that, who are already struggling with the cost that we have in this state. And to offset that, it would be, I think they call it a revenue neutral carbon tax.
Okay. We do have another call on the line here. Cynthia from Honolulu. You have a question?
Sure. This is Cynthia MacArthur with the Forest Service. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. My question is, what role do we as consumers play in encouraging or demanding that companies adopt sustainable business practices?
Who wants to take that question? Trey?
Well, I'll take it.
Okay.
I think you, like any business framework, you vote with your feet. I think that it's probably not universal, but publicly traded companies are seeing more emphasis placed on corporate social responsibility. That's becoming more and more important to shareholders, for example. I do think corporate social responsibility in the workplace is becoming a recruitment and retention tool for companies. Young people, in particular, are interested in working for companies that have fit a profile that they like, and I think that that's always the weapon that consumers have, is they have choice.
And Trey, what can you share just from the Nature Conservancy's point of view?
Well, I think there's certainly things that the consumer can do, but also I think that there are a lot of other incentives that drive what corporate America is and the global corporate community is thinking in terms of how climate change could affect global domestic product or the global economic output. And so I think that there's recent studies being done right now in China that have shown that climate change, the impacts could have a pretty serious impact on the overall global economy, and so that's bad for everybody. And so I think a lot of corporations are realizing they're seeing the writing on the wall that they have to adopt more sustainable business practices, otherwise it could actually affect their bottom line in the future.
So how are businesses helping projects that you've got going, like they're on the Big Island?
Well, this one with the Sustainable Business Forum is definitely the biggest one that we have right now. We do have a corporate council for the Nature Conservancy that also helps with our funding. I think that overall, we've had a very productive relationship with corporations here locally in Hawaii and across the country in basically helping to support conservation actions. And we have partnerships with large corporations like that sometimes would be considered some of the worst offenders, but are actually trying to change their practices, and we've helped them develop better, more sustainable business practices to that end.
We have another caller on the line from Honolulu. Kamiko, do you have a question?
Hi there. Yeah,
hi.
This is Kamiko, and I just had a question regarding what can the average citizen do, either here in Hawaii or beyond, to offset our carbon? Where do we go to support these projects that the DLNR and the Nature Conservancy is spearheading?
Who wants to take that question?
Awesome. Yeah, I'll take a stab at it. Thank you, Kimiko. There's a couple of different websites that you can actually go to. One of them is carbonfootprint.org, and that can tell you the amount of what certain activities that you might be doing as how much carbon that is emitting. So if you're saying, I have this type of car, I have this type of home, it can tell you how much you're emitting, and those websites will usually refer to you to actual websites where you can purchase carbon offset credits in that amount. As of yet, the projects in Hawaii are still in the making, so we're not selling credits yet. But when we do, look out for it in the news, and hopefully you can participate in that.
And so how do we establish this credit and the value? You know, Trey, I don't know if you can talk about any of your projects and how difficult it might be in getting the information we need, you know, to establish this system.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question. What was the question again?
How do we actually set up this system? Are you having particular challenges in the projects that you've got there on the Big Island, you know, about verifying the information? And
yeah, it is a process. You know, the first thing that we had to do was become qualified for the California carbon market. And so we did that, and we are now qualified to sell credits on the voluntary market, not the compliance market. So that was the first big step, and that entailed being able to account for how much carbon was being sequestered in our native forest, and so that was a very complex that involved the Forest Service and the DLNR, and so that was that took several years actually to do that. Once we got qualified, then we were able to really start looking into how much carbon we had on our land and how many credits we would be able to derive. And so we had to do some timber assessments, forest assessments to see how much carbon was there, and then also looking at the growth rates in our forest. So a lot of the science up front took several years to do. And so we've completed all of that part we're at that point now. And of course, as you mentioned before, we do have our preserve is already fenced and free of damaging animals, and we've been controlling weeds there for quite a while already. So we were pretty much already ready to go once we had all those other aspects in place. But at this point in time, we are now, we've gotten to that point now where we're about to select a project developer. And so that project developer then comes in and assesses how much carbon there is. They do a more broad assessment, and then they basically develop the project and enable us to start selling the credits on the market. And once that happens, then we also have to be verified. So there's a process where another contractor comes in and then verifies how much carbon is on that property and how much is available, how many credits are available to sell.
So how far out are we in actually getting something, getting to the next level?
How close we are?
Yeah.
Well, we're about to pull the trigger on the project like this next month. And this over the course of the next fiscal year, we will be hopefully ready to start selling credits this year.
Okay. And Anne, how does this work? So at this point you said, you know, Hawaiian's point of view, it's more philanthropic, right? You're
right.
Trying to help this out because we don't have this system set up. And Hawaiian has a foundation that you're able to...
We have a charitable foundation, right, called the Hawaiian Airlines Foundation. How original. And so every year we donate money to education, environment, and culture. And so this year we were able to use our environmental gift money for this purpose. In conjunction with other partners at the Sustainability Business Forum.
And so do other businesses, are they doing the same thing, or are they just donating straight out? How does this all work?
It's a diversity of partners, so their participation is also a mix, I'd say. Yeah. I did want to get back to something that we heard from both Kamikia and Cynthia about what average citizens can do. And it kind of gets to the point of what can Hawaiian Airlines as a company do, both as a company that procures a lot, a company that helps, that presents options to consumers, but also has a charitable foundation. And so I'm kind of thinking of me as a person. I'm both an employee, so I can start making change in my workplace and talking to my boss about decisions that the company makes. I'm also a voter, right, that can make a lot of impact. And I'm also a citizen that can provide testimony to the political representatives in that regulation process. But I might also be a homeowner. In my personal case, I'm not. But if you have a piece of land that you're stewarding, there's things that you can do there. And the consumer part of it is just another avenue where you can take influence. So wherever folks feel empowered to make a difference, be it as in the role as a voter, in the role as an employee within their own company, or just as a consumer itself, I would say pull all the levers that you have to make change and do whatever is fun and easy in your position.
I find that when I go to some of these community meetings, that the turnout is actually pretty good, that people have just this interest. And they will show up at the end of the day because they want to learn about climate change and what's going on in the community with, you know, sea level rise and what to expect. So, that's what I'm seeing, is that people are interested in learning more about this issue.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think to your question earlier, what is in it for us? This particular project, our interest is the Nature Conservancy going to demonstrate that there is the potential to develop a carbon market in Hawaii? If that is true, and we as an airline are going to want to offset some of our emissions, or potentially if our customers want an opportunity to offset their emissions, we're going to want to do it in Hawaii. We just are. It's where we are. We want this environment to stay what it is. I grew up here. I remember what it was like when I was 12, 13 years old, and it was 78 degrees maybe most of the time. Maybe it got to be 82, and that was sweltering, mm-hmm. right? Now what is our baseline? 82, 83, 84 every day. I'm not a scientist. I can tell you it's hotter than it was when I was growing up here.
Right.
It just is.
And Hawaii is your brand.
Yeah. So our interest is trying to develop or see if we have the opportunity to create this market here for the Nature Conservancy to be able to make money, to protect their lands the way they are, for the state and Philip to do the projects he wants to do. This is an investment in that. Where it goes, I hope it goes to a wonderful place. I hope at the end of the day it proves that there is a great market for Hawaii-based carbon. That's what I hope.
Okay, and if you're listening out there and want to join in this conversation, call 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. We have seen a number of efforts throughout the community. The city and county of Honolulu has announced this whole thing of, you know, planting, I think, 100,000 trees. So there's a big push on that. And, you know, across the globe, I think what we're seeing in France, we've seen President Macron try and, up a tax to be able to reach their green goals. There's pushback there. And so it'd be interesting to see what happens here locally when things like the carbon tax comes up, or, you know, other legislation to be able to get people to think about rising sea level changes and what projects we might have to fund, because they are going to be very expensive if we have to adapt.
Yeah. Definitely. I think it kind of gets to the point that you call out earlier, the ambitious goals that the governor set up and that we have statewide, and how can we actually work together to make that happen. And it'll be a combination of groundbreaking pilot projects like the ones that the Nature Conservancy together with SBF and also the state is pursuing. It'll take some regulation, and it'll take changing hearts and minds. As our director Celeste Connors often says, that's really how you affect change. That kind of ripples through all the different ways that people can take influence. So I think if we kind of think outside the box and engage in different partnerships that we haven't before, that actually allows us to pursue a future that we are not on track to at the moment, but can be different and can be better.
Philip, you want to add anything there?
Yeah, I just want to share one story because stories are really important to change hearts and minds. In the neighborhood board of my community where I live in Mekelle and Mo'ili'ili, we have this climate change topic comes up almost every time. And you know why? Because there's this map showing sea level rise by 2050, I believe. And our community will be gone by then. And people are realizing, just like you say, it does come up more and more. People are seeing now the effects that you have, especially in our coastal areas with highways breaking off and beaches being washed away and corals dying off. So it's about time. But I think we still have a little ways to go in educating people and really showing that this is a serious issue and that it might require some changes in their lifestyle. I'm not saying that we should, go back to living on trees, but I'm saying that we got to be open and realize that what serious issue this is and be open to new ideas of transportation, new ideas of how we use our energy and how we live our lives.
We do have a shy caller on the line. Not on the line. I had a question. We're about to make Maui an international airport. So how can you talk about mitigation if you're about to expand enterprise? You can drive your car for a whole year and not expend as much carbon as one flight.
Maybe that question gets at the issue of how can you grow sustainably? And I think that's kind of the million-dollar question that all of us are figuring out in Hawaii, is how can you become more sustainable and at the same time not shrink what you're trying to do and the amount that you can travel and the amount that your economy can support. And I would flag kind of a success story and a nice thing that to celebrate, actually, that a couple of months ago, the United Nations invited Hawaii to become a local hub for sustainability solutions. So they're looking actually, it's kind of, sometimes you don't realize how awesome the work you do is until you get really outside attention coming in. So I would encourage us all to feel good about how we're thinking about these questions in Hawaii, how we're trying to balance what we can support in our industry, in our economy, and at the same time become more sustainable at the same time. And so that invitation was accepted a couple of weeks ago by the network of Hawaii Green Growth Partners. So we're proud to be a local 2030 hub for the United Nations to provide some of the solutions that we can share with the world and share our aloha, our mentality of how to approach these solutions.
Okay, we have a call on the line. Larry from Honolulu, what's on your mind?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, I hear you talking about growing trees, and giant bamboo grows faster than trees, and you can shape it. You can grow it square or triangle, which gives you a great use for it in construction. And we know they use bamboo for flooring. And in Japan, they use it just for scaffolding. And they had a metal scaffolding and a bamboo scaffolding, and a storm hit, and the metal scaffolding was destroyed. The bamboo was still there after the storm. So it's a real sustainable way to grow something that really would cut down on carbon, you know. And we've got the land and we've got the right weather to grow giant bamboo, and it grows so fast. And when you do that with the oysters in the ocean, and you do it with the mushrooms on the land that's contaminated with the hemp, you're talking about going in a different direction and really making a difference without spending a lot of money.
Thank you, Larry, for that comment. And Philip, I know we were talking about the Albizia project. You folks are trying to find a way to use Albizia because we have so much of it.
Right. I'm glad this topic comes up. And I'm riding a bamboo bike myself. So
there you go.
You can use locally grown resources in a very, very innovative way. We got to be really careful, though, when we talk about these species. Especially in Hawaii, we are the most remote place in the planet. That means that our ecosystems here are some of the most fragile ecosystems in the world. We are we have a huge issue with invasive species and albizia, and unfortunately, some of the bamboo species too are highly invasive and very hard to contain. We had millions of dollars of damages during Hurricane Isel on Big Island because of all the albizia that is growing there. So we got to be really careful when we look at exotic species to sequester carbon. And the state is very aware of that and very careful. But yes, we should think out of the box. We should come up with innovative ideas of not only cutting down and letting these albizias rot and the carbon that is stored in these albizia trees get back into the atmosphere. It would be much smarter to use it in affordable housing and have it stored for the next few decades in there. So yeah, I'm really glad this topic is brought up. Use local resources, be mindful about it, and be smart about it.
Okay, anybody have any quick thoughts? We've got about a minute left.
Yeah, I mean, I would just like to reiterate that a lot of these invasive species that Philip was talking about also, they crowd out our biodiversity, and they also use more water than our native forests. So when selecting species to grow for carbon, we do have to be careful because it could also create a more difficult situation for us in the future for capturing and providing water.
Anybody else? Quick thoughts? Recap?
Just thank you. Thank you for the time and the conversation.
Yes, we'll be hearing more about climate change and carbon offsets and carbon taxes and carbon fees. But so we'd like to thank everybody, Trey Menar from the Big Island, Julius Fisher, Philip Lahela Walter, and Ann Botticelli. And we'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us here on today's show. And if your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact our talkback line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday for more of The Conversation.